Hello, it is Liam Schmidt here from Irish Funds. Today we are bringing you the third of a series of recordings from our recent Irish Funds annual conference held in Dublin on May the 18th. We are delighted to share with you this panel entitled The Investment Limited Partnership, Why Now is the Right Time. The ILP is growing in influence in the structuring of private assets. Paul Giblin of IQEQ moderates this session as we hear from a panel of leading experts who have all established ILPs themselves and how it has successfully met their expectations. The panel will include Paul Kelly from Elkstone, Sarah Crawford from Beflexion, and Tim Jenkins from Lingotto Investment Management LLP. I am sure you will find the insights to be fascinating, and do keep an eye out for further podcasts shortly from the Irish Funds Annual Conference 2023.
Thanks for coming along. So I'm Paul Giblin. I'm the Managing Director of IQEQ Fund Management here in Ireland. IQEQ Group in Ireland operates a fund administration business, corporate services, and the fund management business that I run. And we're part of the broader global IQEQ Group, which is currently in 24 countries around the world in fund services. I'm delighted to have our panel here to talk about the Irish Limited Partnership. I guess a somewhat early Christmas present in December 2020 when the Irish Limited Partnership Amendment Act came into being. And so since that time, there's been a number of launches, and obviously then that has increased or accelerated in the last 12 months. But what we wanted to do was sit down and talk to some people who've actually launched limited partnerships, talk about the investor experience, the thought process that led them to make that decision, and really get kind of down into the weeds of that decision-making process, and indeed some of the challenges that presented and some of the enhancements and improvements that we would make. It was interesting listening to Owen this morning talking about capabilities. Well, the Irish Limited Partnership is certainly an enhancement in that regard, in broadening our capabilities. But like anything, things can be improved, developed, and enhanced for the good of the industry, investors, and so on. So we might kick off first, because it's particularly relevant to understand where everyone's coming from in terms of their own organisation. So I might ask Paul, Sarah, and Tim just to introduce their businesses so you can just understand why the limited partnership is so relevant to them. So Paul, I might come to you first.
Yeah. Hi guys, thanks for coming. So my name is Paul Kelly, and I work for Elkstone Capital Partners, and I've been with the firm since December 2019. So Elkstone would have come about around 2012, and it's had different versions. Elkstone in 2012 would have been a family office of about four different clients, and the founder would have started angel investing in venture companies at that point in time. And between 2012 and 2015 would have invested in about 25 different companies through the 1907 limited partnership structure we have here in Ireland. At that point in time, there was a merge took place between Elkstone and a company called Opportune. And this merger brought the real estate business of Opportune under the Elkstone umbrella. So from 2015 to 2017, 2018, the venture investing would have continued, bringing up to about 50 million invested, about 10 to 12 real estate projects, also under the 1907 structures. And we also started to build a private investment office business where we have about 50 clients who would essentially pay Elkstone a retainer to mind their wealth and to look to increase it, and also investing in the deals that we'd put together. From about 2021 onwards, around the time of the ILP, we were getting to the stage where we had about 150 plus clients and institutional investors looking to partner with Elkstone. So we started to look at the various regulated products that Ireland had, the ILP, ICAV, etc. So that's the journey we've been on to date.
Thanks, Paul. Sarah, do you want to just tell the story of Beflexion and how you came to this point?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Sarah Crawford. I work for a company called Beflexion. I've been there for 12 years. I've recently, a year ago, relocated back to Dublin from London after 18 years of being away. Beflexion is a multi-class asset manager, largely focused on private equity type funds across various asset classes, fund-to-fund business, largely life sciences, biotech, real estate, other areas. We do have hedge funds. Beflection has been based in Ireland for 12 years, more so on the credit side. But we have expanded our business, which we'll go into a little bit in a few minutes, just recently in the last, say, 2 years.
And Tim Jenkins, you might just tell us a bit about Lingotto.
Sure. Hi, I'm Tim Jenkins. I work for Lingotto Investment Management, a wholly owned subsidiary of the Exor Group. We're a London-based asset manager, investing across global hedge and private asset strategies. That's covering Irish Lux, Cayman vehicles. That's including three ILPs.
Great, thanks, Tim. Okay, Sarah, we might get straight into it then, and you might just talk through the thought process around coming to the decision to choose an Irish Limited Partnership, and then maybe just develop that in terms of your engagement with investors and so on, and that journey that you went on, ultimately, obviously, launching the ILP.
So there was three real decision points for us that ended up why we ended up in Ireland in more of a substantial basis. One was Brexit. Have to mention Brexit at some point. And the fact that we wouldn't have a presence in Europe post-Brexit. So we did want to have a European establishment, and Dublin is now effectively our head office for Europe. The other decision was around our own strategic decision-making in terms of expanding our capital base. We have been largely funded by a single investor, and the decision strategically was to expand our products to external clients, what we consider external clients. And to do that, we needed to be able to distribute across Europe. And the last piece really was around CP86 and whether we were going to do the fully outsourced model or fully insourced model. And we weren't comfortable fully outsourcing our distribution function. So we had to put a business case together, explain the rationale for being here, the importance of having that license to market across Europe, you know, what we would need in order to satisfy some of the CP86 requirements. And because it, as I said, the strategic direction was to start marketing across Europe, it wasn't really that difficult sell. What was, you know, we had largely Jersey-based funds and limited partnerships, so we're very, very comfortable with the limited partnership structure. So an ILP was just like a welcome, and once that product became available, the decision was made pretty quickly then.
Yeah. Tim, what about yourselves?
So really the key driver behind it being a European regulated structure comes from our group. So our parent company being a Dutch-listed holding company, they're very averse to investing into Cayman structures. We also have a very key third-party investor in our funds who similarly, they're European-based and similarly required a regulated structure. The choice of kind of Ireland was driven as the first ILP setup was at the same time as an ICAV sub-fund launch within the same investment team. So it just made sense to leverage the relationships that were being created through that sub-fund into the ILP structure. And it kind of the ILP itself, it has a very familiar feel of an LP structure that you might get in somewhere like Cayman. And also the Cayman funds that we didn't have at the time but were launching, having Ireland as a place for new funds enabled us to just build relationships kind of across the globe, because a lot of Cayman funds are administered out of Dublin. They're kind of audit contacts out of Dublin, whereas you don't really get that crossover in Lux.
And what are you ultimately investing in?
We truly are global hedge and private asset strategies. So across our business, be it open-ended fund structures, closed-ended fund structures, it is everything. Specifically in the ILP, the two ILP structures, I say two because one of them is master feeder, they are predominantly private equity and kind of what I call, but we'll come on to later, special situations.
Yeah, okay. What about yourself, Paul? So you guys, obviously it's been, you know, talked about, I guess, in terms of your strategy, it's very much venture-based, but actually addressing a slightly different marketplace, if you want to call it that. So again, you arrived at the ILP, you talked about the 1907 partnerships, but again, just talk about your own process, I guess.
Yeah, so by the time we got to 2021, our Elkstone story as such was that we had institutional investors who were looking to partner with us and had been impressed by our track record of venture and the real estate investing. So when it came to choosing a structure, we probably had three lenses to look through. We had our high net worth and family office investors, the institutional investors, and us, Elkstone, as the investment manager. So we were very keen to ensure that we could have the widest base of investors possible in our fund and for our high net worth individuals. So we wanted something that ticked the box of the ILP was the qualifying investor criteria, where investors could essentially self-certify that they understand the risks and rewards of investing in a high-risk product like venture, which was great. The institutional investors clearly wanted a regulated product, and they wanted the likes of the advisory committee that gives them comfort. So that was another tick the box. From the Elkstone private side, we obviously were a small investment manager at the time. We wanted to manage costs, we wanted to manage speed. So clearly the CBI 24 hours was brilliant, and that does what it says on the tin, which is brilliant. The umbrella structure, so that will allow us to manage costs going forward, and we're already looking to have a second sub fund underneath the structure we currently have. And just the depth of the service, private service here in Ireland, which is fast, and it's brilliant. And one thing that we are in a kind of privileged position to see is with all the venture startups coming to us, we see an absolute abundance of people coming out of the various administrators, depositories with ideas to help speed up costs, service, and setting up their own businesses. So from an international manager point of view, while these small startups will eventually hopefully go global, having a base here in Ireland is a great opportunity to help these companies shape what their product will be.
Yeah, and there was obviously no difficulty in terms of at the client onboarding level, in terms of them committing or that sort of understanding around the partnership structure and so on.
No, everyone seemed, we didn't really have any major hiccups. Lucky, obviously, we had over 150 individual LPs and lots of different questions, but there wasn't anything we couldn't answer and give people comfort from.
Yeah, and you were saying that in the context of the partnership and its kind of look-alike to Cayman or otherwise, that you were saying to him about the fact that gave comfort in terms of XOR, indeed in terms of Lingotto.
I think we didn't really have any issues when we launched in particular. It was a new product. I think we were probably one of the first as we started. July 21 was the launch of our first ILP, so there's been teething issues with the various vendors. From an investor point of view, it was generally well received, I think, it's fair to say. Being a new structure, I think one of our key investors, they did engage local legal advisors in Ireland to conduct a review of the documents that the funds advisors had put together, and to really help the investor get a better understanding of the structure and comfort that it was akin to partnership structures that they're more used to.
Yeah, and so it's like it's governance, it's tax transparency, it's those boxes effectively that are being ticked.
Yeah, I think it was really them just getting comfort, because it was they were fully versed that it was a new structure in Ireland. It was one that they definitely wouldn't have invested in before, and so they were just it's about comfort.
And Sarah, you talked about the fact that establishing here in Ireland, creating substance here, but then using that as a European distribution base. So what's been the investor reaction then to the structure overall?
I think what the type of investors we're looking for are, you know, high net worth individuals, other family offices. So they're just very keen on having a regulated environment, and one with a good reputation. So Ireland is very much on top of that list for them. So I don't think there was never really any concern, but the only concern I would say was there is just the unknown. You know, it's an untested product. Mm. Again, we were relatively, I think we were number 9 or something on the list of the ILPs. We have 3 now, but that was the only real reaction. I don't think it was anything adverse reaction to setting up in Ireland.
Yeah. Okay. Again, for any one of the panel, really, we've obviously seen, so I mentioned, you know, end of 20, okay, COVID, et cetera. But ultimately, in terms of it, the starting point, and as you mentioned, Sarah, you know, there's certainly room to grow in relation to the Irish Limited Partnership. So in terms of sort of assessing that, what do you think are the barriers in terms of relative to our Luxembourg cousins, for example?
Well, I think it's our cousins. you know, it is very hard to break the norm. And the intermediaries, the law firms, the tax advisors are very comfortable with the Luxembourg structure. Luxembourg, you know, it's such an established environment for private equity. And once you're there, it's very, very difficult to move away from there. You have the relationship with your service provider. Your clients are comfortable with your structure. So it is very hard to break that down. But an area that Ireland could focus on is the startup industry. We talked about technology earlier. It's all about innovation, you know, this whole conference about innovation. And it's those funds that are like venture capital funds that we should, you know, I personally think we should be targeting. Because once you get your first fund here, you're effectively tied in.
Yeah.
But there is some, unfortunately, some tax legislation that doesn't really work for a private equity type business. So a lot of private equity firms will use SPV structures to hold the underlying operating company. And there is tax leakage up the whole co structure because you've been taxed on your dividends, which doesn't exist in Luxembourg. And that is, it's difficult, to, you know, that's a cost to use an investment manager, that's a cost for running that, and it hits your IRR, which hits your carried returns, and it hits your management fees. So.
Yeah, okay. And Tim, your own assessment of that, is it just habitual? Is that much of what's gone on?
I think that's the main driver of Ireland versus Lux. A lot of kind of, let's call them private equity businesses, but covering all strategies, they tend to operate in vintages. So the ILP or a partnership structure would typically be commitment-based. It'll have deployment of commitment through an investment period and then have a harvest period. Once the investment period has ended, the investment manager will turn to a new fund, a new vintage. And who will they target? The same investors from the first fund, particularly when they get to vintage 4 or 5 and vintage 1 is now in its harvest period and distributing capital that could be available to reinvest. And it's a lot easier for investment managers to copy and paste the previous fund's docs, just re-engage with the same service providers. And if they're starting in Lux, that's how they get tied in, most to what Sarah said.
Yeah, okay.
I think there are other potential deficiencies with the ILP. And would say like kind of a main one that we've encountered is around the lending rules in Ireland. And whilst you know, ours is a predominantly private equity-based strategy, it's wrong to think that we just invest and take buy shares and sit on them for 5 years and everything will be fine. The types of assets that go into these types of fund structures tend to be real assets. Real assets have real problems. And taking equity as an example, sometimes we may need, as the investor in that company, need to make a loan to that company. That might be a short-term loan. It's not something that's going to be forever, but it might be something that the company needs to get them out of a short-term difficulty. It might be something that we need to do in order to close a transaction quicker. Or it may just be part of the structuring of a transaction whereby you make an equity investment and a loan at the same time. And where there's very limited flexibility in Ireland, that could be seen as an issue by people looking at fund structure and options.
Yeah. And again, as you look at your own funds and the time horizon of those funds, is that something that you kind of need addressed, I suppose, and in the context of your developments in these in partnerships going forward?
From an equity point of view, it's something we've had an issue with once, and we were able to find a solution for. If we saw it as a recurring theme, if we as a business had to turn away deals that we thought were attractive because of the local regulation around the fund over what we could transact in, then I think long term
it could drive that. Yeah. What about yourself, Sarah, and Bflexion? In terms of, again, sort of developments, challenges, and so on, we had Jennifer Carol McNeil here earlier. If we were sitting down with her for some time, are the things that you would raise in relation to your own business and business development?
The lending is an issue. Most private equity firms will have an element of equity and debt. Now, it depends on where you structure that debt. You can structure it directly into the operating company. But, you know, a lot of the time you're also going to do some type of shareholder loan or a bridge financing, etc., as we discussed. It's also the cost of setting up, the cost of finding that DP who can give you that day count. And the day count can be quite onerous. And I feel that, you know, to me, it's not clear how this day count is calculated in terms of your overall AUM. Mm. And I think that's always, from a group perspective, when you're trying to get the budget to hire in Ireland, to establish a business, to establish your own Manco, so that you can set up the future ILPs, a lot of that is convincing in the initial working capital setups. Like, you know, you want to have senior individuals in your compliance and your risk roles. You want to be doing what the regulator is asking, but then trying to understand this level of day count is quite difficult to explain back to, say, the UK, where we're head officed.
Yeah.
When it's not the same for the FCA.
So it's actually, it's not the ILP structure at all. It's much more at an early stage in terms of your establishing substance here and the requirements
exactly.
around it.
A lot of our business is also seeding GPs and managers in the startup phase, also while seeding their first ILP, or their first LP, wherever that happens to be. So far we've done them in Ireland. And so that's a big focus for them. So, and how you can bring them in under your umbrella and kind of help them and bring them along, because they don't necessarily want to fold into your Manco either.
Yeah, okay. Paul, anything you'd add on that?
No, just to echo the lending points, especially in the current climate where a lot of venture funding has probably dried up to a certain degree, and it's hard to know how long that will last for. But if we, as one of the major shareholders in the company, are very positive in that company and we can't lend to it through the current structure, that really puts the company in an awkward position, because it kind of looks like that we're not supportive when we clearly are. Mm. And it's just a hard story for the underlying investee companies to tell to any other funders why we can't support them. So
Yeah, absolutely. And then in terms of sort of broader capabilities, right? So Tim, in terms of just the general market and as you've come here and set up the funds and so on, one of the themes here is around capabilities and the capabilities and services and so on and so forth. Your experience in that regard in terms of supporting the ILP structures that you have?
We picked deliberately kind of the larger service providers to act with the funds. So on an administration depository side, an AFIM side, because that particularly allows us to focus on the cross-product nature of our firm. The same, you know, in all elements, to be honest with you, so audit, tax, legal. Something we have found is that, or we found in a positive way, is that we're now looking to transition, or we have been looking to transition service providers from original Lux funds to the larger service providers that will service them out of Ireland. Yeah. You know, it bridges several gaps. One is just having consistency across our firm and being able to do that on a global basis. Others are as simple as kind of language barriers. So we don't have that with Ireland. Ease of travel, people are frequently going both ways, people from Dublin into London and London to Dublin. So that has been a big positive with the ILP for us.
Okay. Sarah, anything you'd add?
I would say, the vast majority of the service providers, whether it's law firms or tax, are very, very articulate, very able to explain the local regime. And so when they're facing off with our, UK lawyers, it is a lot easier because it's under Anglo-Saxon law, everyone speaks English, etc. So I think that's been a real positive. I think the area that we have struggled with really is around the nuances of private equity and private equity investing with our service providers, maybe a lack of understanding around the valuation and valuation techniques. And I think there is where experience is needed because private equity just isn't a very well-established industry here. The capabilities around calculating carried interest, whether it's a European waterfall or a US waterfall, around hurdles, etc. So they're the real nuances within private equity that are different to other product lines. And so they're the areas that we, I suppose, have struggled with a little bit and have had to do a lot of education along the way.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, I might just throw it up in the few minutes that we have, just any questions that people might have for the panel. If there's anyone. Yeah, go ahead. You might just introduce yourself and then just ask a question.
There was definitely a little bit of an education process around just really reiterating the kind of segregated liability aspect of it, and it was something new. And we're getting closer to launching our second fund, so I'm sure that will come up again. But I don't see it becoming it won't stop us, I think. So once that initial education piece went out, it was okay.
And we haven't explored the umbrella fund structure yet. The reason being is with the three ILPs that we have established, they're effectively what we classify as different investment partnerships. So you wouldn't want to have the investment manager or the advisors are segregated. But for the future funds, because there's only fund one and two, so hopefully two and three can be under a similar structure. But the question is always around ring fencing that liability for the different clients and getting people comfortable with that structure, I think is going to be the question.
A similar response here. All three of our ILPs are not umbrella structures. They're all very distinct. The first one was just set up as a straight partnership. I don't think really much thought was given to it being an umbrella. With the next two that act as master feeder, we took the decision, I think primarily, to set them up separately, just for the avoidance of any confusion, so that it was very transparent.
Thank you. Another question? Anyone else? Okay.
Just on the umbrella structure, the cost savings are significant for another sub-fund underneath that umbrella, especially for a smaller manager. It makes a major difference.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Sarah, just picking up on something you talked about, which is around the whole area of education and waterfall calculations and so on and so forth at the service provider level, just in the context of the future growth of the ILP and it addressing the demand of the private equity industry and others, would you see that as something that's really necessary to address in terms of building that knowledge base, building that within all the service providers so that they can service investors such as yourselves?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you want to do is make sure as a service provider that you're providing your client with confidence, right? So you want to have the right people at the other end of the phone that you know that you can pick them up and you're not going to have to overly review that. We obviously have oversight, but you're not actually talking them through these carry waterfalls. So I think understanding the nuances around private equity and how their fee flows and their structures work and the advisory model, or whether we are operating a delegated fund management model with an advisory entity around it. So understanding how your fee flows work and understanding that nuance, I think, is really important for the future of the ILP process, because you want to give your client the confidence that you can manage these products.
Yeah. And Tim, we talked about the habitual nature of forming partnerships. You will continue to launch Irish Limited Partnerships, you think, into the future?
I think it will be very strategy dependent. So if we replicate an existing strategy and we don't expect to have any lending, then definitely I think we would do.
Very good. Thank you. Any final questions before we... Oh, go ahead.
So Matt Devaney, being part of that, I've heard anecdotally that there's still 1907 structures being launched. And I'm wondering, what's pushing managers or investors, for that matter, down that route when the advent of the ILP is now mature to an extent? Is there still regulatory constraints that stymie speed to market for the ILP that would direct people to 1907, or is it just a different paradigm shift up?
Elk's done have a number of 1907s trying to take that. Yeah.
So for the venture fund, that's set up purely for Republic of Ireland's seed stage investments, but we do Series A and international deals. And a 1907 structure works very well for the speed and cost in terms of getting maybe 10, 12 LPs together quickly. So that's why we'd be using it.
Our own experience is it does tend to be based on a limited investor pool, speed to market. It works. It can work, you know. Other questions? Okay, well, look, I want to thank the panel very much. So Sarah, Paul, and Tim, thank you so much for your time. And I know you're all going to rush back, so you don't have to wait long. Have a coffee, come back, and you can hear it all again at 3:45. Thanks very much.